This is the Rich Eisen Show.
So, as you know, I've had an issue with my Uber rating for quite some time now.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Click your icon in the top right.
View my ratings.
Yeah, view my rating.
Oh, this is fantastic.
16 one-stars.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, Fox Sports college football analyst Bruce Feldman. Coming up, Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. Plus, from Amazon Freebies, Bosch Legacy, actor Titus Welliver. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. We spent much of hour number one, if not the entirety of it, in the SEC, Jimbo Fisher, and Nick Saban mosh pit. And we had Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic join us as these two kind of traded words through the media. Later on in this hour, part of the Jimbo Fisher press conference about whether they have traded words in private since then. And we'll play for you the entire Nick Saban soundbite. You know, in this day and age where you kind of take a soundbite here, take a soundbite there, I want to put it all in perspective, the comments he said about Texas A&M and about Dion's program at Jackson State, in the entirety of what he said, in the proper context. We've given you the context, but I wanted to give it to you the context in which he said these words, because it also has something to say about where he thinks the sport is going and what needs to happen in order to, if you will, clean all this up. Even though both schools involved and both coaches involved say nothing needs to be cleaned up, because they did it all on the up and up. Hour number three, Titus Welliver, the man who plays Bosch, amongst many other terrific roles that he has played in his great career. He will be joining us here in studio, in person.
All right.
And it's going to be great. We're going to have a whole big conversation with him in hour number three. But right now, we're going to talk professional football, where the men were paid to play. And there's contracts and unions, and we all expect it. And the transfer portal is something called trading and free agency. And this man has got a big gig and a lot of people with eyes peeled, because that's what happens when you're the new head coach of the Chicago Bears. He is the pride of Toledo, Ohio, now trying to lead the parade down Michigan Avenue for the Chicago Bears faithful. On the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is the new head coach of the Chicago Bears, Matt Eberflus. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing better for talking to you. Let's start our chat, if you don't mind, hitting the Wayback Machine. Is it true that one of the coaches you played for when you played football at Toledo was Nick Saban? Is that a true story?
That is a true statement. There's no doubt about it. 1990, his first year as a head football coach, he was coming from the NFL Houston Oilers. He was the defensive backs coach, got the job at Toledo, and we won the MAC championship way back in 1990 in 1 year.
So you saw firsthand his ability to move men and move them in the right way, correct?
We had so many guys on that team that were either talking about quitting during the winter conditioning, or they did quit. So we had 16 stations in winter conditioning, and man, they were brutal. I had terrible shin splints, couldn't walk downstairs. But I pushed through it. I ended up being the starting linebacker. I was all conference that year, and we had a heck of a year. We ended up being MAC champions.
So he put his stamp on things, in other words.
For me to be able to see that, because that really helped me, you know, when I was either turning the defense around, or as I'm going to do now, turning the Chicago Bears around. That really helped me as a young man to be able to see, you know, and really live how he did that. That was impressive by him.
So are there any Saban-isms at all? You had a handful of coaches there while you were at Toledo, but
Saban is, you know, one of the things I learned from him is that it's always the next play, you know, so you focus your attention on one thing and then you move to the next play and then do it that way. That's how you play a football game, and that's what he really instilled in me as a player.
And so you got into coaching in the NFL after having some time in college. And was it Eric Mangini who gave you that first pro job in Cleveland? Is that how it happened?
Yes, exactly. So Eric Mangini was calling around, and Rob Ryan was the defensive coordinator, and what they did, they interviewed a bunch of college defensive coordinators. Luke Fickell was one of them, and myself was another, and several other guys. But I ended up getting the job, and that's how I got into the NFL, I think 13 years ago now, I believe. So, but, yeah, it was Eric and Rob.
And Rob was the guy who wound up bringing you to Dallas as well. Is that the connection to the Cowboys?
Correct, yeah. I followed him to Dallas, and then he got let go from there, and then I ended up staying on with Monty Kiffin originally, and then Rod Marinelli was the guy that took over the defense there. I think it was in 2014 in Dallas. I spent 7 years with the Cowboys and the Jones family.
Man, I mean, Monty Kiffin, Marinelli, Nick Saban, those are some serious names that you were watching and, I guess, soaking up, right, Coach, entire time?
You learn a lot from each guy, and you kind of form your own philosophies as you go through that. All those guys are really good coaches, and they've all done really well at the profession. To me, it's what forms your philosophies and what forms your strategies of how to get things done through observation and working with those guys and see how they do it. That was a great experience for me.
And, of course, there's really no prepping you for your first coordinator job that you get through a guy who's agrees to be a head coach somewhere and then decides not. And that's how you got the gig at the Colts. Correct, Coach Eberflus? That's how that happened with Josh McDaniels?
Yes, that was correct. So going into the Super Bowl, we accepted the job to go to Indianapolis. And then on Tuesday after the Super Bowl, he decided not to take the job. And I'm sitting there with Chris Ballard. So we just basically said he came into me right afterward. We found out that he wasn't taking the job. He says, "You still got a job. You're good to go." And about 10 days later, might have been a little bit less than that, they hired Frank Reich, and him and I hit it off in the beginning. You know, our philosophies are in the same, lined up, and he's just a great, great man. I cannot say enough about Frank Reich and Chris Ballard. Those guys are just unbelievable, and they were very supportive. Let me do my job at Indianapolis, and I certainly cherish that time there, and I thank those guys for that.
So you take the job, you leave Dallas to take the job in Indianapolis to work on the staff of somebody who then says, "I'm not coming." Chris Ballard says, "You're still staying," and then you work with a guy on a staff with a guy you'd never met, right? You have never met Frank Reich before?
No.
Either way?
Never met him.
Damn. I mean, how do you handle a situation like that? How does that happen?
Well, I just think be yourself. Yeah, you be yourself. And Frank saw what kind of person I was and how I coached. And he was like, "Man, I really like the way this looks and the way it feels." And we had some good defenses. We were in the top 10 every year in defense at the Colts and sometimes a lot higher than that. But I thought that he liked the product on the field. And also we work well together just man-to-man. With our personalities and philosophies are right in line. So it was a real easy transition for us.
So what would you say your philosophy is that now that we've walked everybody through your history to get to the spot where you're at? I mean, what a job to have head coach of the Chicago Bears. That's quite a bold, bold, bright letter, a line on a resume. What did you tell the Bears, the McCaskey family and everybody else there, Ryan Poles as well, that your philosophy is that you can let the fans know, Coach?
Yeah, I would say this is that look at the tape. Watch the tape and see how we played as a defensive unit, and that's my philosophy. And what you'll see on tape is you'll see guys that play extremely hard. They're very intense. They know how to take the ball away, and obviously we're going to have to take care of the ball as well on offense. But we're going to play hard. We're going to be very intense. And we're going to take care of the football, take the ball away, and we're going to be smart. I'm going to drill these guys in situations to make sure they understand the critical points in the game that win football games. That'll be a 2-minute red zone into the game, 4-minute, all the situations, and we're going through that right now. And then really it's more about my coaching philosophy. I believe in this. I believe in the coach and player relationship. I think that's very important to get the best out of the player. You have to have that. And how do you do that? Well, you do it really in four different ways. You model the behavior you want to see as a coach, and then you do that with the player, and the player does it for everybody else. And in that, as you model, you inspire guys. You inspire them to act and to do right and to work extremely hard. right? And then you challenge. The next thing is that you challenge guys. You have to challenge them. And how you do that, you do it in a respectful way. So you model, you inspire, you challenge. And then at the end of the day, football's hard and it's difficult. And the last thing you got to do is you got to be able to encourage. You got to be able to encourage yourself to keep going and encourage others around you. So that's really my coaching philosophy. And what the product you'll see on the field is what I talked about, the hustle, you know, the intensity, and then taking care of the ball and being real smart in situations. So that's what we talked about, and that's what I've done throughout my career, and that's what we're going to do here at the Bears.
Matt Eberflus, head coach of the Chicago Bears, here on the Rich Eisen Show. So we just walked through your history, and obviously it's on the defensive side of the ball, and you said look at the tape and see how we play on defense. Many Bears fans are concerned about the other side of the ball, though, Coach. I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school. About how Justin Fields is the hope for so many there in Chicagoland. What is your plan for him now, Matt Eberflus?
We went through phase one and phase two, so we've had a lot of classroom work with him, and we've been on the field for the voluntary minicamp, and then we're just starting OTAs, and we have about, including mandatory minicamp, we have about, you know, 10 or 11 more practices to go, and he's just doing a really good job. But to answer your question, is that we're going to build this offense around him, you know, his skill set. And part of that is being able to acquire the skill set and fit it around him also. And that's the most important thing. What can he do and what does he do well? And then let's enhance that. And that's what we're doing. You know, the offensive staff is doing a really good job. You know, we have a great offensive line coach, you know, Chris Morgan, you know, paired with our offensive coordinator, Luke Getze, who's got a really innovative mind. He comes from that Shanahan, you know, Kubiak tree of the wide stretch zone and the play action pass, and the whole thing's built off of that. And if we run the ball really well, which we will because of our line and the way we're going to operate, we're going to be able to really open up a lot of windows for our quarterback. And the system is really quarterback friendly. It's been quarterback friendly for a lot of years. It's won Super Bowls, and you can see what it did last year for even like Stafford. You know, he gets in that same system, and man, he just takes off and really flourishes in that system. And the second year for a guy like Justin Fields, he's just going to take off and do really good things in improving this year and setting our foundation for the Chicago Bears.
Well, I mean, Coach Eberflus, so I deal in the world of narratives and hear many of them, and they cross my ears, whether it's people calling in or me talking to observers or just hearing from Bears fans. And the general sense, though, is that despite the plan that you may have for Fields, that the roster isn't there yet for him to succeed. And the general sense is he could get seriously hurt in the same way he could not finish last year. Now, obviously, you can't worry about that. That can happen on any snap in the NFL. But how do you respond to people saying that you're still not ready for Justin Fields to succeed on the field right now?
Well, I would answer that by saying this, is that, hey, you know, we're building a foundation here. You know, so, you know, what we do, how we do anything is how we do everything. You know, so it's important that we build a foundation of what we want to be in the future. You know, and the future is, I know the future is now in the NFL. I understand that. But we're in the process of building that. And that is player acquisition, you know, with Ryan Poles and myself. And it's also scheme. You know, how do we do a good job of protecting him, you know, through the play passes, you know, through the quick passing, through the screen game? How do we do that? And that's going to be very important for us to do that as we go. So, again, we want to build a team that plays extremely hard, and that's one of the foundational pieces. And it's not going to be built overnight. Now, we're going to be, you know, pretty good as we get started, but we'll keep improving every single week.
And so how did you find Justin Fields when he arrived? Obviously, you've been around many a quarterback at many different stages of career. How did you find him in terms of his development when you first met him, Coach?
Yeah, I just think, you know, he's really grown leaps and bounds in the last few months. I can tell you that. I mean, his footwork is really, really improved. The timing of the passing game is really improved. His decision-making is improving as we speak. And they're just doing a great job. We are, as a whole staff, of really working on the details of that. And I think that he was like a big sponge, just soaking everything in. And he is a fast learner. The guy is super smart, able to understand the width and depth of the offense. and we are going through it the second time now. So we've already put it in once, and now this is the second time through OTAs, and he is just doing a bang up job with it, taking command of the offense now, and we'll see how it goes. And it's going to keep going really well through a mandatory mini camp and then into the summer. But he's doing a really good job. We're pleased. Really pleased with where he is.
And you've definitely saw firsthand with your time at the Colts, to say the least, and obviously with Dallas, that if you've got a bell cow quarter running back, you put the bell on him. Is David Montgomery that guy for you, Coach?
Yeah, I think that it's David Montgomery, and it's also guys that, you know, we're bringing in. There's some other guys in the mix there, but, you know, I know this, that, you know, David Montgomery's got the skill set to get it done for sure. And the wide zone scheme you've had, you know, of the Denver Broncos and, you know, shoot, all the teams of the past that have run this scheme, there's been many a running back get over 1,000 yards in this scheme. And so we're excited about that part of it. We're excited about the offensive line, how they're progressing too.
All right. On the way out the door, Coach, I'm going to give you a piece of red meat to chew on or do what you wish. You know what, you know, Lovie Smith, one of your predecessors, was asked about the Green Bay Packers when he first took the job. And he's like, we're going to beat them. He just flat out said that. I don't know if you're aware, while you were in Indianapolis, Aaron Rodgers let the fans in Soldier Field know who really owns the Bears. I don't know if you heard that line. Did you hear that line from Aaron Rodgers at all, Coach Eberflus?
No.
You can't. He said, I own you, is basically what he said. How do you, what's your sense on that rivalry, Bears-Packers, and how you're going to handle that?
I think it's a great rivalry. And you know, if you go back to, you know, the old days, you know, with Lombardi and Halas, and what I know about those two gentlemen, okay, is that those guys were good friends, and they understood the rivalry, and they understand what it was about. And I understand that it's a historic rivalry, and we're going to treat it as that, and we're excited to get to play those guys twice a year.
Okay. So just remember when you hear that line from Rodgers being said to you maybe at a podium, where you heard it from first, I'll let you know about that one.
I will say this. My dad used to say this to me all the time. We will see.
We will see. Fantastic. Coach, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Best of luck. It was good to run into you at the Combine, and let's do this again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. I appreciate you, man. I look forward to seeing you again.
Right back at you. That's Matt Eberflus, the new head coach of the Chicago Bears, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. There you go. Let it be known. I mean, he's one of the bigger question marks of many coaches in the NFL, certainly in a primo spot, you know.
Yeah, I just think also, too, because nobody really had heard of him.
Right.
You know.
Right. And taking a defensive-minded coach for a situation where the offense is the biggest
right
focus of everybody in that town and fan base.
Always, for the last 30 years.
Right, and then I just gave him a shot. Remember, Lovie Smith came out in his introductory press conference and just went right at Green Bay, saying, we are going to win those games. You know.
Which is what you're supposed to do.
Well, I mean, he, you know, he's
how you win the fan
a different
base,
personality right there. And now he knows, I guess, Aaron Rodgers said that yeah, the Bears are owned by him.
And you know, Rich, right? I mean...
what?
It's Chris.
With all due respect to Coach Eberflus. Great guy. He's finally got his
what
chance.
What are you setting up?
There's absolutely zero chance that he had never heard Aaron Rodgers say that before. I mean, it was national news for a whole week, and then the next time around when they played again.
I'll push back a little bit on that one with just a general sense of about coaches, and then also a little bit of a personal knowledge here, okay?
I mean,
coaches are in total lockdown, and they don't know anything that's going on in the real world. A lot of times,
that's not real world. That's his own world.
I just remember that's years true ago, Mike Shanahan was at the Pro Bowl, I think he was, or I forget where it was. But this is when Brokeback Mountain was everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was a huge movie, as you know. It was Oscar.
Huge movie.
Right?
One Best Picture?
And just everyone was talking about it. Op-ed pieces were being written about it. And I remember making a reference to it, and he had no idea what it was. None. No clue. And so coaches sometimes just shut off the world. But in terms of Eberflus, I met him once. It was nice of him to say, see you again. I saw him at the Combine. He's represented by a former agent of mine when he was in the broadcast world, Trace Armstrong, one of the greatest people on planet Earth. And he, I think he represents every coach everywhere now. And I met him for dinner, and who was sitting there but Eberflus and Ryan Poles. And I got to meet them and hang out. And it's at this outstanding downtown restaurant in Indianapolis that I've been to now three times at the Combine. It's outstanding. I'll give him a little shout out, Bluebeard.
Okay.
And Eberflus had never been there before. And he had been the defensive coordinator in Indianapolis for four years, 2018, 19, 20, 20, and 21. He had never been there before. And the reason why, he's like, this is a great place. I'm like, you haven't been here? And he said, no, it's because it was downtown and where the Colts have their offices and practices, totally different part of town. And that's where he spent his time. Never went down, like, I don't think he ever left his office, or I don't know if his car knows a different route from his house to that spot. He had no idea. He goes, yeah, I don't come around here. And I'm like, you don't take any time off? And he kind of gave me this look, like, are you kidding me? So I believe it, that he would, like, he like Bears and
I know,
like,
but
a
he's
Colts
got
defensive coordinator in tunnel vision getting ready for his game. He's not paying attention to, you know, Rodgers being picked up on a hot mic in Soldier Field, you know?
You and Eberflus, same age. Okay, he's like a month older than you.
Yes.
All right? You have kids.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eberflus has kids.
Okay.
Your kids let you know about a lot of stuff that's going on, right?
Yes, okay.
You don't think one of his kids, after he got the job, was like, huh, Rodgers owns you guys.
Maybe not. Okay.
Depends on how old his kids are.
I'm just saying that Eberflus might be the right guy for the job, where he's just coming in clean slate, just focused on what he's...
I agree with Chris,
focused
though,
on. Huh?
Are you okay? Need a hot towel or something? You all right?
My mom knew that Aaron Rodgers said that, you know? So, so I'm pretty sure Eberflus had to know. I don't know what
he still
was.
Own you. Well, we will see, I guess.
I mean, look, I hope he does a great job. The football.
Why would he deny it, then? Why would he say, I don't know?
Well, to not give any type of credence to Rodgers.
Yeah, playing mind games.
Yeah, I heard that.
Just be like, no, I didn't even, it was so stupid, I didn't even pay attention to it. Like,
okay, so then if that's the case, then you know you've got a controversy-averse coach of the Bears, and he's just going to keep it straight vanilla, and hopefully he can win football games, and that the former assistant in Green Bay, Luke Getsy, is coming down the toll road, and he's going to bring an offense that he's clearly handing off to him. You do it. You do it. You bring the Shanahan Kubiak system down, multiple running backs from Mike Anderson to Orlandis Gary to Terrell, Terrell Davis.
Fantasy football's worst nightmare.
Have gotten 1,000-yard seasons. So here comes David Montgomery and the rest of that room downhill at you.
I mean, I hope so for Bears fans. Like, it's
Rich Eisen show glue guy Treston Ebner wound up there. Here they come.
Football's better when the Bears are good.
Yeah. I have a few friends that are Bears fans, so I wouldn't mind seeing them do well.
Plus, also for you, football's better when coaches bark at each other.
Way better. Also, Rich, you did whiff on an opportunity there to drop an Ashton.
I just lobbed you up.
It
was Stockton the Malone, bro.
It was like the LeBron Dwayne Wade video.
You missed it.
I'm thinking a segment ahead. Very rarely do I do that. I try to live in the moment.
I mean, it's his favorite thing, Chris, and I gave it to him.
Because I was making a transition to break. And
Rory McIlroy, 6-under.
Damn.
Come on. Just birdied 5.
Damn.
Can someone on my team do something?
All right, let's take a break right here on the Rich Eisen Show. When we come back, the full statement in question from Nick Saban, a big 2-minute soundbite, just to be fair and balanced to the 2-minute soundbite we gave to Jimbo Fisher in the first hour. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial film debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Streaming right now on Netflix. Let's talk Game Time. Boy, do we love using Game Time tickets. at the Rich Eisen Show, and every single time I've been watching the basketball playoffs on TV, I've been wondering what it would be like to be at these games. And when you choose your tickets on Game Time, you can see the view from your seat, where the court is, where you are in relation to it, and then the all-in prices. That's my favorite feature. The all-in prices makes sure that you see the lowest price guarantee and also know exactly how much everything costs all in before you purchase. So all the guesswork is removed when you buy playoff tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account, redeem my code RICH for $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Yeah, you know, he didn't do it. Fisher didn't call out what Saban did. So before we go any further here.
Yeah.
So we played you that 2-minute soundbite at the top of our show from Jimbo Fisher's response to Nick Saban. Nick Saban, again, was speaking to some local business folk in Birmingham, Alabama, I believe.
Birmingham.
Just nearby the old ranch in Tuscaloosa. And name, image, and likeness came up. And he went on a lengthy, the entire soundbite that I saw was close to 8 minutes long. Obviously, in a show like this one, we're not going to play the full 8 minutes. But here's the relevant 2 minutes of what Saban said, in which you'll hear the sound bites that have been ringing bells all over the place involving Texas A&M and Jackson State and also the Miami basketball program rolling.
It's not supposed to be something where people come and make money. And you make a decision about where you go to school based on how much money you're going to make. You should make a decision based on where you have the best chance to develop as a person, as a student, and as a player, which is what we've always tried to major in. And we're going to continue to do that and hope that there's enough people out there that want to do it. But I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players. And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future, because more and more people are doing it. So it's tough, and people blame the NCAA. But in defense of the NCAA, we are where we are, right, because of the litigation that the NCAA gets, like the transfer portal. Every time somebody wanted to transfer, they'd apply for a waiver. Right, if you didn't give them, the NCAA didn't give them a waiver so they could be immediately eligible, they filed suit. So the NCAA would back off and give them a waiver. So they just said, we're just going to make a rule where everybody can transfer. That's how that happened. So if the NCAA doesn't get some protection from litigation, whether we got to get an antitrust or whatever it is, from a federal government standpoint, this is not going to change, because they cannot enforce their rules. Just like Nate said, we have a rule right now that says you cannot use name, image, and likeness to entice a player to come to your school. Hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys at Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. So, but the NCAA can't enforce their rules because it's not against the law. And that's an issue. That's a problem. And unless we get something that protects them from litigation, I don't know what we're going to do about it.
So my 2 cents on what Saban just said on what he thinks needs to fix the situation is to get federal government help, because of his example of the transfer portal issue, that the players sued because they were asking for a transfer portal waiver and didn't get it. And the court system said, yeah, that's illegal, so now we're just going to make a rule where everyone can get it. and that now the federal government should come in and make some rules with some antitrust exemption so there can be some enforcement. You can't enforce something that's illegal, which the court system ruled the transfer portal waiver issue the way it was being done. They ruled that illegal. And so now you want the federal government to give you some sort of antitrust exemption so you can now enforce rules that were initially illegal? And by the way, you know what? You know who gets antitrust exemptions? Professional sports leagues. Right. Professional sports leagues
right.
get antitrust exemptions. That's not the way out of it. If there needs to be a way out of it, and again, I think there needs to be some rules set up. And if you can't do it for all member schools at every level of football, you're going to end up seeing these teams get together, conferences get together of like mind and like revenue and like school presidents and like national recognition, get together and create their own damn league with their own rules. And that's it. That's where it's coming.
I mean, I hope they do.
Because what Saban said just kind of made no sense. What it means is that there are other people out there operating their collectives in a way that either Alabama won't or, heaven forbid, can't. Which might have been, I know you're looking at me like Alabama could do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But he's talking to local business leaders, maybe saying, where's your NIL money? Step up. You're seeing what the 12th man's putting in that collective.
That's a good assessment.
How about you become my 12th man? I have no idea. Or he could just be like, this is the way I've operated. I don't like operating this way anymore. We need to have somebody come in and make the rules the way it used to be operated, same way. I have no problem with guys making money if there's a collective that calls me up and say, hey, coach, there's a, again, I always use this as a phrase, Buddy Garrity wants to put some money into, loves that left tackle, wants to give him a Dodge deal or Bring something like that. And then that's what he went, okay, sure, no problem. I got to go try and dismantle, you know, Texas A&M this week. You go for it. As long as you just keep it legal. I don't want any sort of problem.
Keep
Good kid.
Keep
he deserves money. You're right. But not like, you know, kid now saying, hey, as Saban said before that soundbite I played for you, they do, in fact, have kids coming up to Alabama saying, if I don't make this much in NIL, I'm not coming. And I don't blame him for basically saying pound sand. Do you not know who I am? Nick Saban. He also pointed out over $1 billion in NFL contracts have been earned by Alabama players who have gone on to the next level. That's, you know, he's still Alabama. He's still Nick Saban. But if he's sitting there thinking, you know, federal government, what is he going to call? Senator Tuberville? Hey, remember I used to beat your ass? I don't know if he was still. I think he probably did beat his ass.
Well, he beat everyone, yeah.
So you're saying I don't know if he was already out of Auburn by the time he got to Alabama. I don't know that off the top of my head. But he could call up Senator Tuberville. Hey, while you're taking a crash course on how to be a government official at the level of United States Senator, Tommy, you know, can you talk to me about legislation or maybe get it out there? I mean, is that the way this thing's going to get fixed? The federal government's going to come in?
Yeah, we don't need
so, that. No. And plus, it's not going to come in to fix something that the courts have said is illegal. I mean, his point was essentially, hey, you know, look at the transfer portal. We used to do things a certain way. Then the courts came in and said, that's illegal. Now we got a rule where everyone can do it. Yeah, that's what's called a remedy. His remedy is for the federal government to come in and give them what professional sports leagues have so they can figure something out to level the playing field. I quite didn't understand that. And then again, the way this is going to go, like I said, is that some teams like Alabama and Texas A&M and other schools from the SEC will call up my alma mater, I'm sure, and Ohio State and the Big Ten and call up, you know, Clemson and the ACC and whoever else wants to come. Notre Dame, you want in, USC, come on in. Let's figure it out.
Texas.
Let's figure it out. Let's go to the Big 12, whoever's left there, and get them involved. Mike Gundy, he's a man. Call him up.
He's 50.
Let's all get together. Don't leave out Coach Leach because, you know, he'll say anything. And, you know, and let's all get together. And we'll come up with our own rules. There'll be 40 of us, 50 of us. and we'll have our own college football playoff, and that's it. Who says no?
Nobody.
Well, certainly if it becomes easier to budget things and easier to plan things and easier to not pay lawyers and pay the kids instead of the lawyers, I mean, that might be the way it goes. So at some point, interestingly enough, I think Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban will be on the same side of this issue eventually. Question is when are they going to talk to each other? Today's not that day, apparently. This was a soundbite from the Jimbo Fisher press conference we've yet to play. Hit it.
Have you had any contact with Nick since?
No. Oh, he's called.
You just didn't take the call?
Not going to. We're done.
And
he shows you who he is.
And then I just wanted to...
He's the greatest ever, huh?
And then I just wanted
when
to...
you got all the advantages? It's easy.
Like, Jimbo never had any advantages. I mean, come on. Come on. Like, Dabo, too. Like, really? Oh, so Nick's the only guy? You never did anything? Your hands are clean?
Let's get the federal government involved.
Like, stop.
That's not common.
Again,
that,
Chris, none of this would come out if Nick hadn't said anything. That's, you're looking...
Well, everybody knew. Like, Nick just said the quiet stuff out loud.
Well, and that's why I said at the beginning of this program, when Dabo Swinney said, let's blow this thing up, it's got to be blown up. Who's going to blow it up? The NCAA on their own volition? The school presidents of their own volition? No. Who's going to blow it up? The you know, the court system might force somebody to do that, but
maybe.
But they already did that with the NIL, and we were waiting around a year, and it's now worse. Remember, it was last July we came on this show saying the NIL starts today.
Yeah, right.
Now look at us, less than a year later. It's a mess. There's no rules, or there's no sense of rules, and now you've got people calling each other out at the highest level. That's what's going to blow it up. That's what's going to blow
Nobody's
it up.
Nobody's going to kill Fight Club.
Yeah, you don't talk about it. Nobody's going to kill the Golden Goose.
Can't talk about it.
So,
oh, it'll still be laying eggs. The Golden Goose is laying adamantium expensive eggs.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. That's why the ones who make the most are just going to get together, and that'll be that. It's coming. I don't know when.
Oof. Great. We're all here for it.
My son, my oldest, is 13. He's turning 14 this summer. Will he be out of college by the time that happens? I don't know.
I mean, they could have it next year if they wanted.
Oh, they can't even figure out the number of college football playoff games they play.
Right, exactly.
But that's easy, the way Chris. Through it. That's the way through it. The college football playoff system, they govern their own body, as you know, as to when they play and who they play in the college football playoff system, different from the NCAA. That's the organization or the umbrella under which a Super League could be formed. Gene Smith of Ohio State, pardon me, the Ohio State, the athletic director of the Ohio State is talking about the quiet part in that regard out loud. He's just throwing stuff out is what he said.
Yeah.
Just throwing stuff out.
Just throwing stuff out.
He that's the ultimate not saying, just saying.
Yeah. I'm just throwing it out. Hey, maybe.
As you know, the not saying, just saying is a close cousin of with all due respect, where you're allowed to say whatever you want after that. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. The great Titus Welliver is making his way to the studio. Don't go anywhere.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
No,
the
I went over.
ST driver from Callaway. You've got to check it out, folks. Just like the irons, there's four different versions of this incredible Rogue ST driver. Most stable, fastest driver ever. Engineered with a new tungsten speed cartridge, gives you more speed on off-center hits, provides more forgiveness thanks to high MOI. And there's one for every single player because Callaway knows who to fit with the best stick. Most golfers are going to fit into the Max with that incredible combo of distance and forgiveness. There's also the Max D, dedicated draw model for players who need more shot shape correction. If you need something more low spin, there's the Max LS with stronger trajectory and more neutral ball flight. If you're watching the PGA Championship, the Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS, that's the compact low spin head that the tour players love. Look, Callaway's thought through every aspect of speed, so all you've got to do is go Rogue. Find your Rogue ST driver at callawaygolf.com/go Rogue. Is Rory still tearing up Tulsa right
okay,
now?
Okay, Rich, update from Southern Hills. Rory gave one back.
Okay.
Struggled on the par 3 sixth, bogeyed that one. Tiger Woods currently really struggling. He's bogeyed three of the last four holes.
Damn it.
Two over.
Okay, that's not terrible.
Not terrible.
That's not too bad.
John Daly, Big John, struggled to close. He bogeyed the last three holes. He's two over as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the birds and giving
birds
me the,
every time Brockman gives birds. An update, right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I like
that's
it.
To the tour. The
I like
on
it.
The course.
Your
it's
clubhouse very... leader, Chris Kirk and Xander Schauffele, in at minus two.
Okay, and Rory five under, huh?
Rory
okay.
five under.
Matt Kuchar, two shots back.
Kuch always starts strong.
Okay,
always in every tournament.
He's that's Kuch. Not code for anything, right? Kuch starts strong.
I don't think so. Okay.
What are you laughing at over
there? Just something, I mean, you know.
Let's take some phone calls while we're still on the air, right? Riley in Savannah, Georgia. You're on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Riley?
Hey, Rich. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. Are you walking out the back door? What are you doing? Where are you going?
No, I actually walked into my boss's office.
Oh, okay. Shut the door of the boss's office. Are you the boss?
Yeah, he's away, but he did attend the national championship game in Indianapolis.
Okay.
So, Riley, put your feet on his
Georgia
desk.
Helmet right now.
Okay.
So basically, I called because I've got a couple of ideas that I've been bouncing around since Jay Billis spoke last week, and Bruce Feldman today, and I'm a CPA, and I did about 200 audits of for-profit schools and trade schools, so I'm a trained auditor, and I just keep coming back to a remedy that's going to marry the Super League, transfer portal, NIL, high school, and these collectives. So I think there's a Super League that can generate. It's going to be a private league, or you know, the CFP is a tournament. I think we can generate a private league, but the kicker is that player stipends, 70 to 90 grand beginning for juniors and seniors. So 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, while they're still trying to figure out where they want to go to school, while they're still maybe low or medium on the depth chart, they're wondering if they want to transfer, you know, keep them on the scholarship type of arrangement. But, you know, Florida State and Miami or Georgia, Clemson, you know, you're going to have a different recruitment if you can offer kids, by the time you become a junior, 75 grand, point blank. And if you stick around for your senior year, you don't go into the draft, I'm giving you a 20% raise.
Thank you for the call. Greatly appreciate it. That's food for thought, to say the least, right there. Food for thought.
Interesting.
Those numbers are way too low as far as I'm concerned. The amount of money that I think 50 schools would earn for something like that, the television contracts alone, through the roof. Please. And plus you pay the first couple years, nothing?
Oh, yeah.
Zippo? I don't know about that. How many kids would instead not go there but go to the schools outside of that construct where they can still get drafted into the NFL and get paid an insane amount of money?
Right.
I don't know if you're going to be getting the best talent there just because you want these kids to come and be coached by you. Well, another thing, too, though, I just want to make sure, just get this out here, and I'm sorry to say this, but you understand it comes from a point of love. if you guys ever have to take a call, you may not just stroll into my workspace and close the door.
Why?
And seemingly, like, you hear he was tapping on the table, too. Yeah, like, I mean, was he just sitting in the boss's chair?
Did he just take a seat? I want him to put his feet on his desk.
What sort of accounting firm is being run down there in Savannah? What the hell? There's no rules there either.
Also, that was interesting because yesterday we were talking about we need a bookkeeper for RES Consulting, and then he called. So, you know, maybe he could send us a resume.
He could. No, I kind of like the cut of his jib. I mean, he's thinking about it.
But again, take my gig?
He put his feet on your couch, though, Rich. That's the only thing.
Guys, you got to be just, if I'm out, you just, I'm trusting you're not, like, moving things around in the office and just sitting down and making yourself at home.
There was a day when we actually made a pizza on your desk.
What'd you say?
That's true.
When you were gone.
That's true, Rich.
If people don't remember, on this desk, I'm talking about my private workspace.
Oh, we would never go in there. Right. We would never.
We're the green room?
Yeah. Well, there's guests. Titus Welliver sitting in there right now.
Yeah, I went in there. I put my feet on the couch the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I steal bags of
like
chips
Rick James style.
With Brockman.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. I come into work. Like, what? Magically, some snacks get removed from
there? Yeah, it's like me and Brockman.
For Titus. That's for guests.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but Titus Brockman, wasn't here the other day.
What the hell sort of operation am I running here?
It's a very loose one.
How did we get nominated for an Emmy?
Because we're great.
We're funny.
Rich, you can submit all your complaints to human resources.
That's another problem because you're in charge of it.
His door is always open.
My door is always open.
He's not in there, but the door is open.
Because I have no door.
Pops in Traverse City, Michigan.
Oh,
what's up, Pops?
Pops.
How are you, Pops?
I'm well. How are you guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Great set of pipes, Pops.
Yeah.
Damn.
Strong.
Rich, I got to tell you, I attended my first Michigan game 1972. We bought season tickets.
Love it.
Cost us $48 to go to six.
Wow. That's not the cost anymore, is it, Pops?
You can't park for $48.
On that incredible golf course, too. I can't believe they let people park on that course. What's on your mind, Pops?
I got to tell you, back in the day, I'm aging myself, guys went to college to get an education. I haven't heard the word education mentioned once by Saban, by any of these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody takes into account that these kids go to school and they get out of there. How much did you pay to go to college, Rich?
Oh, well,
what did your education cost you?
A lot. I took student loans to go there, but I had a work study program though, so I got paid. You know, not a lot, but I got a work study, and I mean, maybe that's the way out of it. Like a work study program, if you're involved at a school, giving you a stipend, and then also making money off your name, image, and likeness. I remember Chris Webber talking about. And I'm sorry, we're at the end of the hour, Pops. Call back, please. I mean, Chris Webber talking about he would see his number four hanging in the mall.
Yep.
And he got no piece of that. Come on, now.
That would make you mad, man.
Don't you think?
I mean, I bought two Michigan Webber jerseys back in the day, gold one and the blue one,
and. Maybe he wouldn't have gone in the direction of Ed Martin if he was getting a piece of the jersey.
That's a good point, yeah. Because those guys should have been paid because everybody rocked five.
And then you look back at what Reggie Bush got slapped down for. It's kind of quaint now, isn't it?
Right. Man.
Titus Welliver coming up. Pops in Traverse City, Michigan. I love it.
1972.
Yeah, good.
You know what Pops isn't doing? Shutting the door of a boss's office. Pop sounded like he was in charge.
Pop's going to be retired.
By the way, Traverse City, Michigan is a beautiful city.
So you park at the school on the golf course?
Say it again?
Kind of like the Rose Bowl?
Say it again?
You park on the golf course for the games?
The University of Michigan golf course.
Yeah.
Would you mind looking
it
up? I think it's the same person who designed... Augusta National.
Wait a second. And they're parking?
Really?
What are we doing? Where are you going to fit 100,000 people?
I know, it's
people?
True. It's a big place. I've been there.
So there's a couple of fairways that they put the cars on.
Oh, my God.
And I remember playing it, and people were telling me that it's like a par five over water. The green's over water, and people are like, this is where Jack put it on in two in some Big Ten championship, you know, years ago.
It's a top 100 golf course in the United States.
Wow. I'm not kidding you.
And they're parking. Oh,
you know, people park there.
The Rose Bowl. Every time I go to a game there, it's like
Different parking, a different golf course.
I know that, but it's like I get.
There's history. Like this is where Jack, when he was at Ohio State, he put it on in two, and he did this, he did that, and I'm like,
It's like, what are they doing?
Opened in 1931.
Yeah.
Wow.
Does it say who designed it?
I'm looking.
Was it Tillinghast or Alistair McKenzie or something like that? I don't know what it is, but anyway.
Yeah, Alistair McKenzie.
Yes, it is.
And then it did a redesign in the 90s by Perry Maxwell.
Well, you know, I did a redesign on it in the late 80s because I wasn't very good. I did my own personal redesign.
So you're saying you didn't replace your divots?
No. Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
I did. It's difficult to grow back, certainly when you're parking trucks on it. Trust me, I think the parking does a little bit more damage.
Yeah. I've heard your swing's not great. So.
What'd you say?
Alistair McKenzie did Augusta National.
That's where I go.
Look at that.
See, I got it right.
With Bobby Jones, right?
I got it right. Okay. Titus Welliver's coming out here, folks.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I got the...
Ready to rock.
I got the Deadwood hat ready for him to sign.
Oh, yeah.
Titus, you're going to add your signature and your favorite curse word.
Yep.
That's what you got.
Don't zoom in on that.
Garrett Dillahunt. And, Kristen Bell signed this. Oliphant signed it. Ian McShane, who Titus did some great scenes with, he signed this.
Wish that Thomas Jane read it.
Here comes Titus Welliver, Bosch himself, coming out.